Hello and welcome again to Who Goes There, the biographical quiz which tests our team's knowledge of famous people, be they from the yellowing pages of the history books or the gossip columns of today's tabloids. Let's meet this week's team. Joining Captain Francis Ween is writer and broadcaster Claire Rayner. And on Fred Housego's team is self-described literary hack and part-time broadcaster Roy Hattersley. Now, before we get going, just a quick note about the scoring. I'll award 2 points for a full and correct answer, 1 point for anything which falls ever so slightly short of that, plus the odd bonus point for any particularly brilliant contributions. So brilliant contributions are required, ladies and gentlemen. Let's get on with the show. We start with an archive round in which each of you will hear a recording of a famous person talking. All you have to do is identify the voice and, if possible, enlighten us as to what they might be talking about. Francis, this is your archive voice.
If I wanted to satirise the present political order, I should borrow for it the name which Punch invented during the First German War, Govertisement. That's a portmanteau word and means government by advertisement. But my intention isn't satiric. I'm trying to be objective.
Now, this doesn't go to Roy about govertisement. Sounds very New Labour. Who was that trying not to be satirical, Francis?
Oh, a tricky one, I would say, Roy.
Well, don't look so
someone
disapproving. It's supposed to be a quiz.
Yes. Oh, I see. Yes. I thought you just gave us the answers. Well, who could it be? Satirical...
Well, he wasn't being satirical. He was actually quite a serious thinker. His first two names were Clive and Staples.
Clive? Does that help in the least?
Well, I'm sure Wittgenstein's first two names weren't Clive and Staples.
No.
Yes, of course they were.
Nor yet
silly of me.
Brecht.
Try the initials.
Oh, C.S. Lewis.
Yes, a bonus for Roy there. C.S. Lewis is the answer.
Never.
Short of saying Chris Lewis, there wasn't much more I could have said there. It's the great academic C.S. Lewis. The Belfast-born Lewis was professor of Renaissance English at Cambridge from 1954 to his death in 1963, but is best known for his writings on Christianity and, of course, those children's books, The Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. Now, Claire, your turn. Have a listen to this.
We do not have our share of representation in the parliament and in the judiciary, and these become the barriers that now must be challenged and that it must be overcome. But the most significant thing is that people are inspired, people are turned on, and where there is a well spirit, people will overcome. I'm just impressed that the difficulties here have not broken the spirits of the people, and the young people have impressed me as having a will to rise above their circumstances, and that's a good sign.
So he had a dream. Martin Luther King.
You're in the right neck of the woods.
It wasn't Martin
not
Luther King.
The right...
We reckon Jesse Jackson.
Well, Jesse Jackson's correct.
We're going to be brutal tonight.
I was about to say that. No, but I mean...
Roy and Fred, could you be a bit more stupid for the rest of the show?
We won't find it easy, in my view.
Very good. It was indeed Jesse Jackson speaking in Brixton during his visit to Britain in 1983. He was born in South Carolina in 1941. He's the adopted son of a janitor. He won a football scholarship to Illinois University before, in a dramatic career move, becoming a Baptist minister in 1968.
He made the best political speech I've ever heard in my life, Democratic Convention in San Francisco 10 years ago. I withdraw that. Of course, Blair's made several better speeches. But apart from that, it was the best speech I've ever heard.
Excellent. Well, there you are. Unalloyed testimonial. Roy, it's your turn next. Any ideas who this might be?
We were fussy when we heard the playback. That's what we were fussy about, because we knew what it sounded like. And if we weren't satisfied, we knew we just fussed until we got it some way or other. Maybe just simply by the simple expedient of just relaxing or something like that.
Pretty laid-back kind of guy. Mm-hmm. Wonder who it was.
Not Duke Ellington, is it?
You're in, again, the right neck of the woods, but these
Satchmo.
Two are busting to get in. Not Satchmo either, but again, you've got
Basie.
The right idea.
Count Basie?
Keep going.
We've always got a full band here, haven't we?
Yeah, sure.
I would say it's Charlie Parker.
Nope.
And who was the pianist? The great, great pianist.
Gene Krupa.
Oh, no, my goodness, Oscar, we are getting Peterson. Very
Oscar
esoteric
Peters.
Now.
Oscar Peters. I'm going to stop.
Well,
this
we know it's not Andrew Lloyd Webber, don't we?
Certainly not Andrew Lloyd Webber. I don't think you're going to get this, chaps, lady.
Look at the smug look on his face.
It was Benny Goodman, the King of Swing. He was interviewed there in 1973. Born in 1909, Benjamin David Goodman formed his first regular band at the age of 25 and was at the forefront of the jazz craze which swept America. Fred, here's your mystery voice.
The door has always been open for the last 42 years, ever since we have had responsible government. There is the same opening for the African as there is for the European. And I'm surprised how many people in this country don't realize that the African has equal access to the franchise and to the vote. But of course, we cannot control the extreme African nationalists who resort to intimidation and who openly practice a boycott against the voter's role.
Ian Smith.
Oh, very good. I think, sorry, you were just a touch late there.
That is my favourite memory of that time when Ian Smith was all in the news and all about, you know, his, what was it,
Declaration of Independence.
And I kept getting letters from women who wanted to know about contraception and were thinking of trying UDI, which I thought was a wonderful definition.
So that's what it meant.
That's why Ian Smith was smiling all the time.
But it made a change of IUD, that's for sure.
Yes, that was Ian Smith speaking in 1965, the year of the interuterine coil, or whatever it's called. Now, let's go on to our next round swiftly, I think. We've trawled the pages of Who's Who to discover a hidden side to various famous figures, namely their stated recreations. Now, I say stated recreations as a cautionary note, because in at least one case, you may think the person is having you on. I'll give you each the names of three famous people and three recreations. All you have to do is guess which person claimed an interest in which hobby. Now, a lordly lineup for you, Francis. You don't have to accept them, but here they are. Lord Archer, Lord Irvine, and Lord Owen. Their professed pastimes are amateur auctioneering, sailing, and theatre. But who enjoys what?
Well, Geoffrey Archer is a very amateur auctioneer indeed. I've seen him in action, I believe. David Owen is very good at sailing close to the wind. And Lord Irvine is an aficionado of art in every form, whether it be £2,000 lavatory seats or a night at the new Ray Cooney farce.
I was going to
say he's
theater.
A theatre man.
A theatre, that accounts for the curtains.
Of course.
Ah, now we understand. Now
that's
we understand.
Absolutely right, an impeccable answer. Well done. A sporting trio for you, Roy. Snooker player Steve Davis, cricket umpire Dickie Bird, and Lord's taverner and cricket enthusiast Tim Rice. And the recreations in question are chickens, chess, and I quote, listening to Barbara Streisand, Nat King Cole, and Diana Ross records. Roy, please mix and match.
Dickie Bird I know very well. It astonishes me that he's interested in anything at all. Tim Rice, I believe, is chess. No, I don't believe it. I believe Barbara Streisand Records is Mr. Steve Davis. No, I don't believe that either, actually. When I think about it. We think Tim Rice is for Barbara Streisand.
No, you're completely wrong. That's three goes.
Well, it seems to me that I don't know these people very well.
Tim Rice is the one who loves chickens, and Dickie Bird is the one with the rather specific, not to say dubious, taste in music. That, of course, means that Steve Davis is the interesting chap who plays chess. And a showbiz trio for you, Fred. Rowan Atkinson, Stephen Fry, and Felicity Kendall. They told Who's Who that they enjoyed working, motorsport, and pressing wild flowers. No, I don't believe it either. But who said what, Fred?
I think Rowan Atkinson's the car freak. From what I gather, he owns dozens and dozens of cars and goes out and buys a Ferrari rather than go and buy a shirt or something.
Don't we all?
Yes, sir. And what were the other two?
You're right about motorsport. It was pressing wildflowers and working.
E. I think Stephen Fry is a flower presser.
He is a flower presser. And you're right. Felicity Kendall is the workaholic. Rowan Atkinson claims to enjoy motorsport. It was Stephen Fry who claimed to enjoy pressing wildflowers. Fry's other self-proclaimed hobbies are slightly more plausible. He lists smoking, drinking and swearing. Now, it's time for our first look at the scores. I see that Francis and Claire have 6, but Fred and Roy have 7. This round is called Significant Others. It looks at those who, while often famous in their own right, unwittingly and usually unwillingly, became involved in events much more closely associated with someone else. They may be bit part players in some momentous event, or may simply have been in the wrong place at the wrong time, as was certainly the case with our first question. Francis, what didn't J.P. Richardson and Richie Valens live to regret in February 1959?
Well, weren't they killed in that month?
You're on the right track.
There was a plane crash.
Yes.
And on board was the equivalent of Oasis, the Spice Girls, and they all came to a sticky end. They did a Glenn Miller, I'm afraid to say.
That's absolutely Big Bopper. Right. Yes. Valens and Richardson, who, as you quite rightly said, was known as Big Bopper, were en route for a show with Holly in Minnesota when their plane came down in Iowa. The date was February the 3rd, 1959, or according to Don McLean's American Pie, the day the music died. Okay. Claire, your turn now. How did Michael Collins circle around the main issue in July 1969? How did Michael Collins circle around the main issue?
Yes. Everyone else went off and did significant things in space, and he had to sit there and watch them do it. I mean, to go all that way and not even leave the ship, I mean, it's a bit much, isn't it? It's like people who go on cruises. It's that sort of thing.
So we're talking about?
Who were the others?
Buzz Aldrin and
Neil Armstrong. Well done. That's definitely 2 points for that team. Well done. While his more renowned colleagues cavorted around on the surface of the moon, Collins stayed in command of Apollo 11, orbiting for nearly 24 hours before the lunar module blasted off from the moon's surface and docked, ready for the journey back to Earth. Do any of you know, by the way, what Buzz Aldrin's real Christian names were?
Edwin.
Yes, that's right. Try two of them, though. He had two.
Dwayne, I don't know.
Edwin Dwayne would have been good, but it was even worse. He was called Edwin Eugene, which is why he opted for Buzz, of course.
How unkind of you to publicise that.
That's awful, isn't it?
Yeah, dreadful.
Do we get extra points for knowing Roy Hatter's middle names?
Yes, certainly.
No, they're very, very good names.
Come on.
Sydney George?
How do you spell Sydney?
With a Y, with
you're
two
right.
Y's.
Give rather. That man a point.
That's an extra point for a piece of gratuitous information.
I know you've lost a load of elections. Do you want to lose this game as well?
Roy, now it's your turn. If Robert Key is the significant other, who were the more famous four from a famous five?
This is the people who set up morning television, not hugely successfully. Michael Parkinson. Andrew Rippon, certainly.
And Anne Ford, that's right.
Anna Ford. Is that enough?
And somebody else, we all know.
Oh, David.
Yes, I think.
Hello
that's
and good evening.
Points.
Yes,
well
of
done.
Course.
Yeah. Robert Key was one of TVM's original famous five presenters, despite not being particularly famous at the time. For its launch in 1983, TVAM hired David Frost, Anna Ford, Angela Rippon and Michael Parkinson, which eventually got to all of those. Along with the relatively obscure Key, they failed to attract the hoped-for audiences to ITV's breakfast programme after the BBC had unexpectedly beaten it onto the screens with its own breakfast time. The fivesome soon disintegrated amid much recrimination and, as far as I recall, wine.
Wine, yes. Aiken got it. Yes, well.
Fred, Tony Locke was one of England's finest ever spin bowlers. But how was he reduced to a significant other in July 1956?
19?
Come on, Fred, don't pretend you're so young.
It comes from down here. Only Yorkshiremen know the answer to this question because it happened up there.
I just stand aside at this particular juncture.
Jim Laker took 10 wickets in one innings against the Australians and 9 in the other and his great mate from Surrey, Tony Locke, spoilt it by taking the 10th wicket in the second inning.
That's people from Surrey for you, isn't
That's
it?
That's people from Surrey. And, now we let them captain England. It's extraordinary, isn't it?
Absolutely right.
We let them be Prime Minister.
Yes, I mean, not even did he know that it was 19 out of the 20 wickets, but he knew which one came in which particular innings. Tony Locke's the significant other, as you rightly say, Roy, because he took the remaining Australian wicket. Our next round is called Curriculum Vitae. I'll read each of you a series of pertinent, but perhaps less well-known facts about a certain person's life. The more information you receive, the easier it should become to identify who the CV might belong to. So please feel free to interrupt me as soon as you think you know who it is. Frances, born in South Africa in 1930, she was raised in Edinburgh, where she attended a Catholic boarding school.
Well, I was about to say, is it Muriel Spark?
It is not Muriel Spark.
No.
But you could have got a lot of points for that.
It's that Scottish school that...
she became a nun and attended Oxford University while under a vow of silence, which meant that during her entire time at university, she never spoke a word.
Well, is it Sister Wendy?
Yes! Well done!
I don't believe Sister Wendy is a nun. I believe Sister Wendy is a German spy. I was brought up to believe that when the German spies came, they'd come and dressed up as nuns. And if there was ever anybody who wasn't a nun, it's Sister Wendy. Ergo, she's a German spy. I've absolutely no doubt about it at all.
Gives a whole new meaning to the sound of music, doesn't it?
Roy, born in Kolomenskoye, near Moscow, in 1530, he was proclaimed Grand Duke on his father's death when he was 3 years old.
This is a terrible question, isn't it?
It is, could be.
Ivan the...
It is. Ivan the Terrible. Well done. It is, of course, Ivan the Terrible, who, amongst all the rape, pillage and other easily misunderstood behaviour, actually set up Russia's first democratic National Assembly. Fred, he's believed to have been born in Alexandria in 1928, although he insists it was 1933. In 1985, he said that he loved Britain because ethics and morals count here like nowhere else in the world. A little flicker of recognition over here.
Jeremy Thorpe. this is... Not, oh, yeah, this is the... That's right, yeah. The guy whose food hall I go through very quickly to find out why I can't afford a hamburger there. This is Mr. Al Fayed.
It is indeed. Well done. The Harris boss has long fought to become a British citizen. He's occasionally been accused of pulling outlandish stunts to help achieve this. That's what it says here. For example, he offered to stump up £7.8 million to keep the Three Graces in the United Kingdom. It later emerged that he intended to keep them on permanent display in the Harris jewellery section. Right, it's high time we had an update on the scores. Francis and Claire have 21, but Fred and Roy now have 22. Now, it's time for a round called Also Known As, which looks at the various pseudonyms, nicknames and guises under which people achieved fame, or perhaps sought to avoid it. In each case, I'll give the famous person's alias. All you have to tell me is how that person was more commonly known. Francis, how did a Mrs. Lamburn find fame with just her first two names?
Well, would it be Richmore Crompton?
Yes! Gosh, you're quick!
Now,
indeed it was Richmore Crompton. Born in 1890, wrote numerous books about the mischievous schoolboy William, and the first, of course, Just William, was published in 1922. Well done. Good 2 points there. Claire now. In what guise did Betty Joan Persky adorn the silver screen? Betty Joan Persky.
Betty Joan Persky. Now.
Duke of Northumberland.
P-E-R-S-K-E.
Betty Grable. Was it Betty Grable, by any chance?
No.
But I'm...
But you sort of...
Oh, the other Betty. You're quite right. Betty Davis.
Nope.
No, actually, no, because that was her name.
One more go, and I'm going to throw it open.
Say again, Betty?
Betty Joan Persky.
Is it Joan Crawford we're going for?
Nope. She was engaged to Frank Sinatra, but was famously married to another Hollywood star.
Lauren Bacall.
Lauren Bacall is right. She shot to stardom in 1944 when the director Howard Hawks cast her opposite Humphrey Bogart in To Have and Have Not. The next year the pair married, and the year after that they starred together in the classic, but incomprehensible, The Big Sleep. Roy, how did Jean-Baptiste Poquelin make a misanthropic impression?
French satirist?
Mm-hmm.
Le misanthrope?
Mm-hmm.
Author thereof?
Thereof. And I've forgotten his name.
Sure, right.
Molière.
Molière, we're both...
Molière is correct.
Like the Everly Brothers.
Jean-Baptiste Poquelin was better known as Molière. He lived from 1622 to 1673, credited as the inspiration for modern French comic drama. Much of his work, of course, was sharply satirical. Fred, how was Dr. Winston O'Boogie going for a song?
Going for a song?
Winston was one of this man's original names.
This is a pop singer we don't know about because we're above all that
sort
indeed,
of thing.
Yes.
It is a pop singer why
obscure.
You do
you
know
wouldn't
about.
Have heard of him, yeah.
Terribly surprising, yeah.
Now, there's two very vague looking people over there.
Are we allowed to join in?
You of course,
Francis,
are.
It's yours.
Well, it's John Lennon.
Yes, it is. Bonus point. Dr. Winston O'Boogie was a pseudonym used by John Lennon, presumably for no other purpose than to amuse himself. Not only does it sound like a completely made-up name, but everyone would have recognized him anyway. Many of those featured in today's show enjoyed a lifetime in the public eye and were distinguished in many fields. Our final round, however, looks at those who will forever be associated with just one main achievement or one fleeting moment of fame or notoriety. Francis, how did Anthony Babington try to do his bit for a Stuart?
So he tried to do something for one of the Stuarts?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I can hear Mr. Housegow sort of muttering.
And yes, I think Mr. Housegow is... Straining at the leash, I will give it
this is the Mary Queen of Scots, the Babington plot, which ended up with a lot more people than Babington going to the scaffold. I think the Duke of Norfolk fell on that one as well.
It was indeed the discovery of Babington's plot to assassinate Elizabeth I and replace her with Mary, which led to the execution of both Babington and Mary. Claire, how did Christopher Cockerell give a wake-up call to the transport industry?
Yes. He learned to walk on water.
He did.
Hovercraft. It was.
Yes, well done. He was the inventor of the hovercraft in the 1950s while working as a boat builder in the Norfolk Broads. Having convinced himself of the viability of supporting a heavy object on a cushion of air, Cockerell's main problem was how to maintain that cushion. His idea of a flexible skirt was much derided at the time, but it proved to be the answer. Within a few years, hovercrafts were in commercial use. And now going to be used, I believe, to cover the square at Lord's, Roy. Did you know that?
Yeah, they won't have flexible skirts at Lord's, I do assure you. They've just voted against it by a majority of nearly 2-1.
Dreadful, too. Roy, your turn now. How did Richard Doll light upon a significant link?
Light upon a significant link?
Richard Doll.
Well, you're on your own on this one.
I've been feeling that all evening.
Doll, light upon a significant link.
How did Richard Doll light upon a significant link?
I'm sitting here bursting with information, Roy, but you won't...
Let Claire do it.
Yes.
She'll explode if you don't
Claire
want to do
explode.
It.
Richard Doll was the man who proved that tobacco, cigarette smoking, causes cancer of the lung. And he did some amazing work. And about 40 years after he done it, people began to give up smoking.
Began to think maybe he was right.
But he was, he's a great, great epidemiologist.
Absolutely right. Well done. Fred, how did Donna Rice cause heartbreak?
Oh, this is one of those ladies that crop up in America about every time there's a presidential election. And they seem to have some amazing stories to tell about goings-on with various members of the expectant candidates.
Not that any of them could possibly...
Absolutely not.
No.
I was watching Gary Hart on television the other night. It was wonderful. He wanted to talk about anything but the fact that they screwed his campaign. I thought that was great.
Sorry, spoiled his campaign would have been a much
yes,
better choice.
Yes, you're probably right.
You're quite right. Donna Rice was the 29-year-old model whose relationship with Senator Gary Hart effectively scuppered his presidential aspirations in 1987. Just for an extra bonus point, what was his boat called where he had the affair with her? Or one of the places where he had the affair?
Something like Randy Gary or something, wasn't it?
Sort of, but can anybody remember?
No, it wasn't the Titanic, was it?
The boat was called Monkey Business. The campaign still had 18 months to run. Hart was the clear front runner for the Democratic nomination until the exposure of that relationship. Well, that's the end of this week's show. Both our teams have done brilliantly. Now is the time to see who's come out on top. And looking at the final scores, Fred and Roy have a very creditable 27, but Francis and Claire win this week with 28.5. Well done to both teams. They were quite challenging questions, those. They did extremely well. That just leaves me to thank our panellists, Francis Wien, Claire Rayner, Roy Hattersley, and Fred Housegrove.